Welcome back to the Block Party. We are here once again. I'm Adam Catterall. Pleasure as always to be in your company, all powered by the wonderful people at Block Asset. Tonight, we've got an extra special show lined up for you because tonight, I think we can label this as the Trailblazers show. That's right. Three stellar guests, all trailblazers in their own right. And I'll introduce you to them very, very shortly. If this is the first time you've ever come to the Block Party, every single Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. UK time is when we get underway. And the whole point of this is to come together as a community to discuss all things sport, all things crypto, and all things NFT. And we are going to go a little bit heavier tonight on the crypto and NFT side of things because the CEO from Vayner Sports is going to come and join us a little later on. That's right. The one and only Mr. AJ Vaynerchuk. He's going to be on the show, trailblazing it in their world. And we're going to get a little bit of insight into the current market and where they're going as a business forward as well. As well as that, they're also well into sports, representing various athletes from all over the world. So we might even get some hot gossip as to what UFC fights are going to be made in the not too distant future. Kicking off the show very shortly, we're going to be speaking to a young lady that is absolutely pulling up trees when it comes to the broadcasting side of mixed martial arts. A former fighter herself who turned her hand to the world of broadcasting, Laura Sanko, is going to be on the show. And sandwiched in the middle of those two, don't get bigger than this. See, I thought that we peaked with Roberto Carlos. I'm going to be dead honest with you. All right. We've had Alexander Usyk on the show as well. Last week, Trent Alexander-Arnold rocked up. But this week, the president of the UFC, the one, the only, Mr. Dana White, will be on the show discussing all things him, building this fantastic brand. And we'll also get his take on a little bit of crypto as well, seeing as that Dan and Till bought him his first ever NFT. We'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. We've also got plenty of stuff for you to enjoy and for you to win offers as well. But as ever, my right-hand man is ready to rock and roll. It is the one, the only, Mr. Nick Pete, smiling from ear to ear, ready to get stuck into another stellar show. And do you know something? It's nice to see you smiling after the weekend, mate, after your football team didn't get the big eared trophy, but still a proud season for everybody on the red side of Liverpool.
Sound, listen, you want to start there? No problem. We've had one of the greatest seasons of my life. Absolutely unbelievable. Competing for every single trophy right up until the final minute. I'll take that every season, please.
All right. Okay, son. All right. Now, as I've mentioned there, we've got three stellar guests, all trailblazers in their own right to come and join us and talk this evening about sports, about crypto and about NFT. And the community is growing on a week-by-week basis, and we want it to carry on growing. If this is the first time you've ever come to the Block Party, maybe you've seen one of our guests, you like one of our guests, and you think to yourself, oh, I want to see what they've got to say, and you've just stumbled across this on your Tuesday evening, do not make this a one-night stand. We're not here for that. We're here for true love. That's what we're here for. We're here for relationships. We want to do some spooning with you, all right? It's not just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and out the back door. That sounded a bit wrong, but you get the gist of what I'm trying to say. Come back week after week and enjoy the Block Party. You do that by joining all the communities. So you can do that via subscribing to our YouTube channel, which is here right now. You're on it, so you might as well subscribe to it. Across all social media platforms, get on the Twitter at Block Asset Co. Get on the Instagram, get on all the social media platforms. And more importantly, make sure you join the Discord. The link to the Discord is in the description for this stream that you are experiencing right now. I'd also advise you, you might just be a sports fan that stumbled across this stream tonight, download yourself a Phantom wallet. The reason why I'm saying that is because tonight could be your night, ladies and gentlemen. Not only.
Tonight is your night, bro.
Listen, not only are you going to be in for some stellar conversation this evening, you might be walking away quite wealthy. That's all I'll say. You know that the big man likes to dish out the bonuses, all right? You know that Dana comes big when he's watching his entertainment in the world of UFC. Well, tonight, just to honour Dana White being on the show, we're having a bit of a fire sale. Right? Are we ready? Are we ready, boys? Are we ready for the VT for the fire sale? Let the people have this. Let them have it right down the neck because tonight, ladies and gentlemen, 60 G's, baby, are going to be given away on the show. Dana, 60 G's, baby! Don't get better than that. Don't get better than that. You remember the Conor McGregor debut in the UFC when he shouted at Dana White and he says to him, 60 G's, baby. He stuck an extra 10 grand on that bonus, but you get what I'm saying. So tonight, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have a little bit of a fire sale during the time that Dana White is on the show. So from minute one to the last minute of Dana being on the program, we're going to have a fire sale. And this is down to you buying NFTs from the lovely fellas here at Block Asset. You know how to do that. You know the websites. All the links are in our description. Get yourself stuck into that. And during that period of time, you're going to see plenty of graphics flying up on our screen of people purchasing various NFTs. All right? At the end of the Dana White interview, we are going to flag up some of the NFTs that have been purchased by you. And we'll give Dana maybe a selection of 10. And then Dana will pick which NFTs he likes. And we're going to split that 60 Gs three ways. All right. So somebody is going to get 20 grand in block. Somebody else is going to get 20 grand in block. Somebody else is going to get 20 grand in block. Mm-hmm. It don't get better than that, does it? You know what I mean? And as well as that, you've also purchased your NFTs. And don't forget as well, as a little bit of an added incentive, see, we're just giving. We're giving tonight, ladies and gentlemen, because as an added incentive during that period of time, what we are going to do is reimburse you the value of your NFT in block. That has never been done before anywhere ever in the world. And I'm obviously going big with that. The lads have told me that that's never happened anywhere in the world ever before. So I'm trusting what they're saying to me, that you purchase your NFT, we will reimburse you the value of that NFT in block, in full. All right. Yeah. Now, the full terms and conditions are on the Discord now. So you can click the Discord link. The full terms and conditions of what I've just said is there for you right now. Follow those instructions. Make sure you're happy with everything and then get involved with this. And it's only going to be whilst Dana is on the show. That's big, man.
Yeah, it is. Is
this coming out of your wages or is this coming out of my wages? Because nobody's discussed this with me.
I didn't know you were getting wages, to be honest with you, but just to quickly go through the terms, 100% paid back in block, as Adam said. You must stake your Legend or Smash Brother Bros NFT for 60 days, 25% block, paid back every 15 days that it's up there. As he said, all the terms are on the Discord. Dead straightforward. Never bought an NFT before? Buy one tonight, because not only will you get your money back in block, but also you could get picked out by Dana White and get an extra 20K in block as well. Woohoo!
He's excited.
I'm ready to go. I'm buying one.
Nicholas, do me a favor. Concentrate on the interview. You're not buying block during this interview, all right? We need to be asking the man questions whilst he's on it. Just a little bit of an added one as well. There's a product roadmap coming out a little bit later on this week. So if you're fully into the Block Asset community, you'll fully know what I'm talking about here. There's a product roadmap that is going to be coming out, one of which, connected to that product roadmap, is going to be an exclusive Alexander Usyk NFT range. We spoke about this when Alexander Usyk was on the show a couple of weeks ago. And the proceeds from that NFT range are going to Alexander Usyk's foundation, which is obviously helping his homeland of Ukraine in this time of crisis. So that is going to be part of the roadmap. That roadmap will come out a little later on this week. So again, make sure you are following all the social channels here at Block Asset and be a part of the Discord, because all that information that we're obviously regurgitating to you now on the show, which we're here doing this every single Tuesday night, is happening day by day, week by week in those particular social channels. So be across that, and that is one that you most certainly should get involved with, because as you know, there's a major crisis going on in Ukraine, and this is how we here at Block Asset can help that situation. So there you go. So make sure you're across the roadmap that is coming your way a little later on this week. Now, before we get to our first guest, I think what we like to do is we kind of like to highlight members of the community, mate. Right, because let's be straight. Some crackpots out there, isn't there, Nicholas? You know what I mean? We've had, well, last week, did we give somebody last something? I think we gave 2,000 block away last week for somebody having a Hamzat Chimaev tattoo on their calf. Correct. Yeah, yes. That's what we did last week. Correct. Now, there's people out there thinking that they can top Trump the Hamzat Chimaev tattoo. And listen, whatever you want to stick on your body and have it inked in there is all down to you, right? But check this out. We got sent this week.
With some super exciting news. This guy unbelievably got our logo, Block Assets, tattooed right on him.
First Block Asset tattoo.
The dude has gone to the next level. He's actually had the Block Asset logo
Dredd said he's getting the next, so I challenge him for that one.
Big shout out to Dredd from the community as well. You heard him, Dredd. You're next. We want to see yours next.
No, this feels like a stag do awesome. With Nick Pete. This is what this feels like. That's
good.
Impressive.
This is awesome.
That's impressive dedication.
So we're going to send him Block for some reimbursement for being awesome. So definitely check us out. We're the real deal, and so is he.
Love it.
Now, there you go. Right? Now, obviously for his troubles of getting the Block Asset logo tattooed on himself, we rewarded him with a little bit of Block. Sorted him right out there. He's obviously called out Dredd to go and get a further tattoo. I'd just like to point out, in the terms and conditions of this, you don't just automatically get Block if you go and get a tattoo, all right? That's not what's happening here. But if you want to do it...
If someone gets a tattoo of me, I will send you some Block personally from my wallet. I want to see a Nick P tattoo on someone. That's next level. Let's go.
Are you being serious?
Yeah.
How much would you send
Absolutely.
Them? How much would you send them?
10,000 Block and an NFT.
No!
And the Legends NFT.
Are you being serious?
Serious.
Are you? Is that something that you lay down now? Someone gets
That's
a tattoo
down
of
like
you.
Now.
What exactly. Do you want? Do you want your face? Do you want what? A name? What do you want? I love Nick Pete. What do you want?
It's got to be a face on it. It's got to be a face, absolutely.
You want someone to get a Nick Pete tattoo, and if they do that, you're rewarding with 10,000 Block and an NFT.
And a Legends NFT.
Tell you what, mate. You're taking things to the next level here, son. You're taking things to the next level. Listen, I can see that our guest, our first guest, is ready to rock and roll. I think she's actually just applied for a Nick Pete tattoo, mate. Maybe she you can reward her with that. Because this is a real honor for us to listen, we just sit here and talk nonsense on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis. We're getting a proper trailblazer to kick off the trailblazer show.
Professional
shows.
Here now. Step up your game.
Absolutely. A proper professional, a person that is really pushing the boundaries of broadcasting at this moment. And I've no doubt, and she'll be very modest about this, I'm sure, but he's most certainly inspiring the next generation of broadcasters to chase their dreams as well. Her story is absolutely fantastic, and it's an honour to have Laura Sanko on the show with us right now. Bring her in, boys. Bring Laura Sanko into the show. Here she is.
What's up?
How are you, Laura? You well?
I'm well. I was literally just Googling best place to tattoo someone's face on your body.
That's it, man. Full Mike Tyson, Laura. You know the score, mate. It's got to be here, yeah?
Absolutely. I thought, how much would you pay me if I tattooed your face on my face? I feel like that would be,
that's next level, mate. That is next level. Now, listen, let's talk about you, because we want the whole point of this show tonight is it's about trailblazers. We're speaking to people that are really pushing the boundaries in their own markets. For you growing up in Kansas, first and foremost, a person from a very young age that turned their hand to martial arts personally, and now I'm not talking from a broadcasting point of view. How did this journey start? Were you inspired by family members? Were you inspired by older siblings? Or was it just you being a rebel and wanting to get into kicking people's asses? What was the score?
It was a little bit of the rebel, but what really kicked it off for me, and this is going to sound so cheesy, but The Karate Kid, the movie.
Nice.
I loved that movie as a little girl. And I don't know why. I was always more attracted to things of that nature than I was, Disney princesses and things like that. I was always a little bit of a tomboy, but I watched that movie, and it was right around the time when my dad was working in Asia a lot, and he brought home this little tiny Taekwondo gi because he had been in Korea. And I put that thing on and I would jump on and do crane kicks on my bed. And I think I fell in love with the idea that in martial arts, if you work hard enough, you can kind of level the playing field and overcome disadvantages you might have because of your size or because of your gender. So I think that kind of feeling of like becoming powerful, even though I didn't feel powerful, was what attracted me to it in the beginning.
What then made you want to do that, as in fight?
Yeah.
Because there's loads of people that obviously go to gyms and they use it for various things, whether it be fitness, whether it be mental stimulation, whether it be self-defense, all those types of things. But actually competing, that's a whole different mindset. What takes you to that level of wanting to compete?
It was a mixture of things. So the gym where I was, it's now called Glory MMA and Fitness. It had a different name at the time, but still the same core group of people. And I think part of it was that that gym was just a gym that was full of fighters. And in Kansas City at the time, there was just one guy in the UFC, a guy named Rob Kimmins, and he was there. And James Cross was just starting to have fights in the WEC. So there was an energy in the gym. But I think for me, really internally, I think I felt like a lot of things that I had accomplished in my life, I didn't feel like I entirely owned them. Like I felt like maybe, you know, my dad was well known in the city. And so when I got a really good job right out of college, part of me thought, well, are they just hiring me because my dad is who he is, you know, I don't know. I just felt like I had done a lot of things, but there was always a little bit of an asterisk there. And fighting was so far outside of the life that I lived in this little very vanilla Christian, you know, upper middle class bubble. I didn't grow up on the streets like a lot of, you know, the guys that we know in this sport did. I had the opposite life, and I think I was just drawn to the challenge where, you know, how I look, how much money I had, who my dad was, what I'd accomplished previous to that didn't matter one iota when you're locked inside a cage with somebody. You just it's pure, I guess. And I wanted that purity of knowing that I could overcome the fear of failure.
What's the family reaction to taking that decision?
They hated it. I mean, I was lucky that I did this after college. So they didn't really have much. I mean, they couldn't really say much about it. I was an adult, you know, but no, they hated it. They never went to any of my fights. They still don't even really watch what I do now on television. My mom will occasionally say, oh, I was flipping through the channels and I saw some people, you know, doing that boxing thing. And I thought of you, but that's really as far as it goes. They were, when they saw that I was happy, they were, it's not like they, you know, disowned me or anything, but it's a world that is so alien to them and so foreign to them. They were not athletes. They were academics. And that's how I was raised. So it's weird for them is the easiest way to put it.
Yeah.
How is it for your son, Laura? Because obviously he's at an age now where I'm sure in school people talk about UFC, you know, everybody wants to be in the playground at least. You know, kids are always emulating the sports stars and everything else. It must be cool for him that mum's kind of, you know, rubbing shoulders with all the big stars and working for the UFC, the biggest fight sports brand on the planet.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. I mean, he's kind of... It just kind of depends. He's still only eight, so he's not quite in the demographic where like his friends are super into it yet. Maybe that'll change when he's like, you know, 13, 14 and up. Mm. And the other day when I dropped him off, I had a huge black eye from sparring, and I walked him in the building, and his little friend, I could just, as he was like walking away, they were walking away toward the class, I just heard his little friend go, dude, what happened to your mom's face? You know?
your mom's been on the streets again, like kicking everybody's ass.
it's definitely kind of here and there, but we, you know, when someone knows who I am out in public, it definitely kind of makes him giggle, and I don't know, he finds it weird, I think, more than anything.
The transition from obviously athlete to broadcaster, in the middle of that is obviously, we're talking about it now, being a parent. And that's kind of the thing that changed. You got to a very, for people that don't know, you got to a very high level. You're competing in Invicta. You won your debut. And then obviously family then starts. How was there a moment maybe after becoming a mom that you thought to yourself, I could go back to it, because we've seen athletes do that in the past, or was it something that was just absolutely off the table straight away?
It wasn't entirely off the table, but for me, it was kind of a different situation, because you have to understand that I had a whole other career that I was doing at the same time that I was doing amateur MMA and then the beginning of pro. So, you know, when I was doing MMA, it was never with the hopes of turning it into, you know, fame and fortune, because there was no option for that. You know, when I started, women were nowhere close to being in the UFC. And then as I kind of got to Invicta, that was right around the time where we thought, oh man, the UFC might pick up women. But then again, it was just the bantamweight division at first. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, they don't have the division that I would fight in if I were to fight. So that, probably not having the atomweight division, was probably the biggest determining factor for me, because I love the sport and I've never stopped training and I've never really I've wanted to remain close to it and in the thick of it. And I'm very thankful that I'm able to do that in the way that I'm able to do it now. However, training, you know, 6 hours a day to make 3 and 3 at the pinnacle is just, it wasn't worth it for me because I had another career, and but primarily just because I wanted to be able to really be a mom. And I'm so impressed by the women who are able to go become moms and then come back to the sport and do it well, like Mackenzie Dern, to come back. And it's crazy because like you go back and watch her fights and you can see her body transformation and her technique just keeps getting better and better each fight. So yeah, I've got a lot of admiration for the women who are able to do it. It just wasn't really an option that made sense for me, even though there's definitely times where, you know, I know I was good enough. I know that if there had been an atomweight division, I know that I could have competed and could have had a good career. I'm not saying I would have, you know, been some great champion, but I know I could have done a lot of good things, but that's not how it is. And I'm happy with what I'm doing now.
No, absolutely. I think that grounding that, and obviously it's a high level of grounding in the sport, is all the things that you can now pull on in this career that you've turned towards in broadcasting. And that for us, watching you and your journey, is the thing that I think is enabling you to be the trailblazer that you are. Now, regarding broadcasting, I'm led to believe that it wasn't actually the plan. It was something that kind of you just stumbled across, chanced it a little bit, tried it, gave yourself, go on, then I'll have a go. And then all of a sudden, geez, man, she's really, really good. Was that the story, or did you kind of in the back of your head think, go on, I'll have a go at it?
No, that's pretty much the story. I mean, I was, I had just had my son. And so it was going to be a little while before I got back in there. And that kind of was the plan initially. But I think I knew in my head that it was never going to be like it was now that I was also a parent. You know, it would just sort of be one of those things that could be there when it worked. So Shanna Knapp, the woman who owned Invicta at the time, called me up and she said, hey, I know you're going to be on the shelf for a little bit. We don't have a reporter. Would you like to do some interviews? And I said, you know, I've never looked at a camera. I've never held a microphone. I've never done an interview, but sure. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So I think it definitely was not the plan. But then as soon as I realized that it gave me a lot of the same mental rewards that fighting did, not all of them, but some of the same. And it kept me ingrained in the sport. And honestly, it part of the reason I've stayed training for 15 years is because of the television, because it allows me, I think, to have a different perspective than other people that do my role have. So I could never give it up. I just couldn't.
One piece of advice would you give to any budding broadcasters or journalists out there? One thing I like to say to young journalists who are coming into covering fight sport is make weight. Everyone who writes about, talks about the sport should make weight just once, because as you know, Laura, until you've actually made weight, championship weight properly, then you will never understand what goes into actually cutting and making weight on the scales.
I think that's great advice. I would love to know how many people have actually taken you up on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I would imagine it's not many. I think to your point earlier, Adam, I think that my experiences kind of help, not kind of, I mean, I think they really do set me apart and have allowed me to sort of switch from the host lane, which you don't necessarily have to have done the sport to be a really good host. And in many ways, I'm not the best broadcasting host. That's not really it's not my background. There are times where I could be more polished and things like that. But to be able to jump lanes into the analyst, commentator, someone worthy of having an opinion, you know, I had to have had that background. So my advice for someone wanting to cover the sport is, I guess, two things. And this is so simple, but just do everything early on and don't expect to get paid for it. My first gig covering MMA was in 2010 while I was still fighting as an amateur. And I just wanted to be cage side. And it was back when Titan FC was in Kansas City. And I fought a lot on their cards because they would have amateur undercards that didn't air on television. And they would just like practice the walkouts on us. But I wanted to like sit close to the action. So there was a blog and I contacted them. This was like way before Instagram and social media.
Love that.
I contacted them and said, hey, I will do recaps of the fights. I'll sit there and type recaps and you can post them if you will like get me a ticket. So I was basically allowed to sit cage side and type out my blow by blow recaps. And my payment was just being able to sit there. And so you have to, there's not a lot of glory and there's not a lot of money early for a long time, honestly. And you have to really, really love the sport. And I think more than the sport, you have to love the athletes who do this sport, which goes to your point, Nick, to understand, to do your best to put yourself in the shoes of the athlete. Because I think there can sometimes be this contentious relationship between media and athletes or fans and athletes. And it comes from the place where the athlete always assumes that they are misunderstood. No one gets me. No one knows what this is like, which is true in some instances. But yeah, I think a true love of the sport, a true love of the people who do the sport and just do the work and do it for free for a while. Cause that's just how it is.
Where does that insane work ethic come from? Laura, where is it just something that is naturally amongst you, or is there role models within your own life that you've looked at and you think, yeah, that's how I should operate?
I've always been a little bit of a obsessive studier and worker. And when I was in school, grades were super important to me. And I would, you know, like I remember my senior year, physics was a challenge for me. I just was having a hard time with it. And so I would wake up on test days at 3 o'clock in the morning, go downstairs in my basement and just review for, you know, 3 or 4 hours on test day. Cause I knew if I could have it in my most recent memory, I would do better. So I've always, I don't know what it is. I've always been willing to go the extra mile to compete with or do better than people who maybe are naturally better at something than I am. And I find myself doing it now because I feel like I'm not in a position where I can rest on, I'm not saying people do this, but I'm not in a position where I can rest on my topology page or point to my UFC belt for credibility. You know, I have to do the work and I have to put in the time and an insane amount of research. And, you know, if my cohort over here is going to do 2 hours, I'm going to do 10. And I'm not even joking about that because I have to, and I want to, and I want to earn the respect of not only this person, but of the fan base when they listen to me speak, be like, oh, wow, she really knows what she's talking about. She really did a research, or she really gets this shit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you find, and listen, this is at the moment, it's a very male dominated sport, especially with broadcasting and various things like that. Do you find that you, and I'm sure you're getting quite a lot of correspondence from young girls, females that want to get into broadcasting, especially broadcasting of fight sports. Are you finding, and listen, don't take this on yourself because I see you as this, that you find it easy to take on the role of a role model as a trailblazer, because people are looking to you and you are the one that is pushing those boundaries and making maybe others believe that certain things are possible in the future?
It's every time someone says that word to me, it both makes me want to tear up, honestly. But then it also makes me, I don't yet feel worthy of that. I don't know. I want to be worthy of that. I do want to be that. And I guess if I really sit back and go through my DMs, at some point I'm going to have to admit that there is an element of that. It's just hard for me to use that word for myself, but I appreciate you using it.
How'd you deal with the flip of it then? Like you said, there's so many people probably coming towards you saying, thank you, Laura, you're making me believe in X, Y, and Z. But there's always a minority that are horrible and nasty and what is she doing here and all this type of crap that goes on. How do you deal with that? Because that must be tough too.
It is tough. And there is a whole contingent of people out there that think I got this job in some untoward and scandalous way. I can assure you that's not how it happened. It was very unglamorous.
That's how Nick works with me. There's all sorts going on.
That's right.
I just gotta butter up the right person and don't want, you know, just flash those pearly whites. Yeah, it's that part is tough, and it's a weird thing because it's like on one hand, people be like, oh, she only has this job because she looks a certain way. And then the next comment will be like, oh, she looks a certain way. There's no way she could possibly have anything intelligent to say. So you just, like anything, I'm learning to deal with it because it's certainly something that's ramped up more as the UFC's part started to put me in these positions to have opinions. But it really, it helps that the people who sit next to me, the Anthony Smiths of the world, the Rashad Evans of the world, the Michael Bispings, the Paul Felders, the Daniel Cormiers, that I think that people can sense that they have a certain amount of respect for me and therefore the fans should as well. So I really owe a lot to my male coworkers in particular who are making a spot for me at the table and doing so, man, it means, I can't even tell you what it means for them to do that. Cause if the role was reversed, I don't know how I would feel being, you know, the champion of the world and little Miss Blondie comes walking in like, hey, listen, I've got stuff to say too.
Listen, I think you're being incredibly harsh on yourself. The door, yes, okay, absolutely. The opportunity comes, but if you can't kick the living daylights out of the opportunity, then it goes away. You're most certainly doing that. You're blazing the trail. And listen, we want to congratulate you as well.
I know that
this is a big thing for you, being the first female in the Zuffa Endeavor era.
It hasn't happened yet. It's going to happen.
Content's coming.
It's going to happen.
We're going to get there.
The big man's on next. Night. We're going to push it over the line for you. We've got him on next.
Listen, I know he's in the studio. I'm hoping that he's actually listening to this and that he's not just wandering around the room waiting for you guys to come on. But yes, no, that's specifically saying it right now. Listen,
he's going to hate us for putting him on the spot. Let's get him in, shall we? Because I don't want you to go yet, Laura. Let's bring it. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome. This is a trailblazer show tonight, and there ain't no bigger trailblazer than this guy. Please bring him into the studio. The one, the only, Mr. Dana White. Sir, how are you? Are you well? Here he is.
What is she talking about that she hasn't got yet? she's done more in a short amount of time than anybody in the history of the company. What hasn't she got now? What is it?
Laura, tell him. Come on.
I would like to be able to call a fight night, sir. Whenever it's deemed the time. What's that?
You haven't called the fight night yet?
No. Remember last year you said she's going to call a fight night by the end of the year? It's June.
All right.
She's impatient. All right. Come on, man. We're going to sort it out.
I'll get it figured out.
Thank you, sir.
I'm on it.
Thank you.
Awesome. You're welcome. Listen, Laura, thank you so much.
That's what happens when you show up at the block party, y'all.
That's it. We're trying to push things on for you. There you go. Laura, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank God you bless. Very much, Dana. I will see you tomorrow. I'm headed out to do an interview with you tomorrow, so I'll see you.
All right. See you tomorrow. Right.
There you go. The one, the only, the trailblazer herself, Laura Sanko. And from one to another, it doesn't get bigger than this. Listen, Dana, we're going to have a little bit of fun and obviously talk about the phenomenal journey of the UFC and you starting this many years ago. But I just want to let you in on something. Obviously, this is a little bit of a community. It's a live stream. We are going to be rewarding people that are watching what we're doing right now. All right. I want to play you something just so you know, because we know that you love giving out the bonuses. When someone performs well, they've got to get a bonus. So we've got some bonuses this evening. Boys, play the little VT so Dana understands what we're going to be doing. The Dana White fire sale.
Dana, so. 60 G's, baby!
Just to remind you of an iconic moment in the UFC. So tonight we have got 60 G's in block. And we are going to award that to somebody that is watching this at some point during our interview. All right, then we're going to give you that power to give that away. For people that are watching this during this conversation, if you're buying your NFTs right now, they'll flash up on the screen. At the end, Dana will pick a particular NFT of which we will then divvy up 60 G's in block 2020. That's what we'll do. We'll do that a little bit later on. But thank you for giving up some of your time this evening, Dana. It's an absolute pleasure. Over 2 decades of blood, sweat, and tears building this fantastic company. But we're going to go all the way back to young Dana. All right, we're going to go all the way back because we never had this conversation, I don't think. Where does this independent, self-reliant, never say no attitude come from, Dana?
I have no idea. I don't know. That's a tough question to answer.
When you were growing up at school, around friends, around the communities that you that you were living in? Was it always the case that you kind of knew that you were destined for something bigger, or is it just the pure ability to be able to sense and see an opportunity when it arises and being able to run with it?
I don't think so. I think the key to everything was I always knew what I wanted to do. I think that's what a lot of people struggle with when they're young. They don't know who they are. They can't figure out what it is they want to do for the rest of their lives. And you're told that if you don't go to college, you'll never amount to anything. So you go to college, you're wandering around school, switching majors because you don't know, you know, what you want to do for the rest of your life. And, you know, that's the whole battle is finding out what you want to do. I always knew. And once I got old enough, I went after it.
Regarding the vision with the UFC in particular, because for people that have followed your journey and know a little bit about the story, obviously you were working in fight sports, doing various other things. But what was the thing that persuaded you in your own mind to obviously speak to your good friend Lorenzo and say, listen, man, there's an opportunity here. This could be this. What was that moment like, having that conversation with Lorenzo to take this to the next level?
Well, it was weird because a few weeks before I found out that the UFC was in trouble, we had had a conversation, and some group had come in and tried to hire me. And I told him, hey, I just got this offer. And he looked at me all crazy and said, what are you talking about? I thought you and I were going to do something together. I said, all right, I'm with you. So, yeah, then literally a few weeks later, I was talking to Bob Meyerowitz on the phone, the former owner of the UFC, and he told me they were in trouble and they were probably going out of business. So I picked up the phone. Lorenzo was in Miami at the time, called him and said, I think we can buy this thing and I think we should. The rest is history. I mean, it was literally weeks or months later and we owned the UFC.
There wasn't a lot to own originally. Apart from a roster of fighters, there was a battered old cage, and it was most importantly, probably Dana, the three letters that you bought more than anything else. But at what stage did yourself, Lorenzo, and Frank Fertitta, did you say, you know what, this sport could actually conquer the world? Was that a pipe dream in the early days, or from day one did you think, everybody on the planet gets fighting? If we can just market this thing right, it could go huge.
Yeah, we felt that way from before we even owned it. We felt like the UFC had a ton of potential, you know, to be global and to be one of the biggest sports in the world. We always believed that from before that we ever even thought about buying the UFC. So when the opportunity came, we loved it. We were all over it.
How hard was that time? You bought it now. You're obviously working on the product. But we've got to remind people that are watching this that MMA was in a very different landscape. The UFC was in a very different landscape. There was state athletic commissions that didn't even recognize it. How hard was that, lobbying yourself, having to pick yourself up, go around to various states, lobbying this sport,
begging
your brand?
Begging at TV, begging to get it on TV, Dana. You know, it's crazy when you think back now. It's on the biggest channels in the world. But back then, you were literally knocking on people's doors trying to get interviews, trying to get meetings.
Yeah, and to get media coverage too, to get any of the sports writers to cover us. So I would fly around the country and meet with all the editors, you know, whether it was papers or television or whatever it might be, and try to get people to start covering us. And nobody was interested. So where we really started was we started buying radio. Radio is where we really started, you know, because you could buy your way onto radio. So started creating these relationships with these different radio stations and all the key markets here in the United States. And, you know the rest as far as how it went with television. We eventually had to buy our way onto TV too.
How much did The Ultimate Fighter change the game for you?
How much was it?
How much did inventing that concept, The Ultimate Fighter, how much did that change the momentum of the UFC?
Yeah, I mean that was everything. It was really what started the explosion here in the United States for us. So the Ultimate Fighter, we put the first episode on we did over 1 million viewers, and then the thing just started to grow. And by the time the thing blew up with Lieben, Koscheck, and Bobby Southworth, we were at like 2.3, 2.4 million viewers, which at that time was very strong.
Yeah.
When you build something like that, when you build a company like that to the levels that you built it, and it's well documented, obviously, recently, obviously, yourself and the Fertittas sold that company to Endeavor. Is it a bittersweet moment selling your baby? Is it a bit? I know there's obviously a lot of money involved, and that's a nice thing. But is it one of those things? Look what we built, and now we're going a different way. What was that feeling like?
Yeah, no, it was very, very hard on me. You know, I don't know about the Fertittas. I think they definitely miss it now. But yeah, it was very, very, very hard on me. But I ended up, you know, it all ended up working out really well for me. So, you know, I stayed on and I'm still one of the owners. And yeah, so not a bad deal. Lorenzo told me when we did this deal, you might have the best deal in all of sports. And then he said, you know what? You might actually have the best deal in all of business.
Yeah, exactly. Got paid and you stay at the top.
That's it.
I want to ask you, Dana, about boxing. Because you're a huge boxing fan, you're a boxing guy. I remember a couple of years ago, you even had the Zuffa boxing T-shirt. You've teased us about getting into boxing. Have you finally took a long hard look at boxing and thought, you know what? Even I can't save that sport.
Yeah, you know, every time I try to think about doing something with boxing, I go, why would I want to do this to myself? Why would I even want to, you know what I mean? Dive into this nightmare. Yeah. And you know, that's why I haven't really done anything. It's a broken business that is an absolute nightmare to try to fix.
Yeah. On this journey that you've had and all the goals that you've set yourself and all the things that you've managed to achieve, what is the moment for you? What is the one moment that you look back at and you think, flipping heck, man, as if we did that? Was it, for example, getting MMA into New York and doing the UFC at MSG? Was it the Ronda Rousey boom and what you did for female mixed martial arts? Is the one thing that you think, wow, man, as if we did that?
Well, you said it. I mean, there's been so many monumental moments in my career that I could look back on and be blown away by, you know, these moments that took the sport to another level, or, you know, made the UFC more popular, or whatever it might be. There's so many of them. I could never just point at just one and say that was it. But if I had to, I guess I would say once we got back on pay-per-view and we got on free TV early in the days with the Ultimate Fighter. I mean, yeah. If it wasn't for the Ultimate Fighter, I wouldn't even be here talking to you right now. It would have been over. Mm-hmm.
What's the craziest celebrity moment you've had?
The what?
The craziest celebrity moment, because we've been at plenty of your shows and the who's who like to come to the UFC shows. There's a lot of famous faces that like to be around that cage, my friend, watching from up close and personal. And I'm sure you've had many entertaining and amusing phone calls over the years from people wanting tickets. What is the one that maybe blows your mind a little bit where someone phoned you up, can I come to the UFC?
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been any situations where anything crazy has ever happened with a celebrity other than just like personal stuff for me, you know? Growing up being a fan of the Red Hot Chili Peppers and then actually becoming friends with Anthony Kiedis and, you know, stuff like that is a little mind-blowing in the beginning. But I don't know. I don't know if I've ever had any weird celebrity moments.
I want to ask you about, firstly, you were gifted your first NFT by Block Asset. It was actually bought by Darren Till for you, the Muhammad Ali NFT. But I've got to ask you, did you catch the Block Asset Smash Brothers docu-series with Till and Hamzat, this BFF relationship they've got going?
I did not, no. But I have the one that he got me sits in my office, and it's right on my desk. I love it.
I think we got it. There you go. Oh, is that the one? There you go.
That's it.
There you go. A little bit of Muhammad Ali there. There you go. Can I talk to you about blackjack, my friend? Because we have heard many tales of you being an absolute stellar blackjack player, and that the Palms Hotel in Las Vegas isn't your best friend anymore. Is this true?
we're cool now. They just let me eat there. They don't want me to play. I've been beating the living shit out of these places here the last few months, man. It's been crazy. I've been making some time to play, and I've just been absolutely destroying Caesar's Palace.
What is it like when you walk in? Because everybody knows that you're good. Everybody knows that you play to extreme levels, and you've wiped a few places out. Do you have to go into a special room away from everybody else because you're just wiping out the floor?
Yeah, there's a private room in the back that I go to, and you can play your own music in there. They got TV, you can order food, you can do all that stuff. If you're a big player and you really play big money, you shouldn't gamble anywhere in Vegas other than Caesar's Palace. Caesar's Palace has the best dealers. They're very, very good. The pit bosses are good. They don't sweat the money. And they just treat their players better than everybody else does.
Love to hear it, man. Just remind me never to play blackjack with Dana White. I'll lose my money very, very
quickly. It's going to be interesting to see how much longer they let me keep going on this. it's fascinating.
Nick just brought up obviously the NFT with Hamza and Darren. I know that you recently went out for dinner with both of those gentlemen. How amusing have you found it? From our point of view, we find it highly amusing, but how amusing have you found this brotherhood that these two guys have found in coming together and this friendship that they've found in working with each other?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, but they're both really cool guys. So the fact that these two connected and hit it off isn't shocking to me at all. I like both of them, you know, very much. They're both really good guys. So, yeah, I don't know what else to say about that other than they're both cool.
Well, what is the next things for you, Dana? Obviously, with the UFC, we know that we've got a hell of a next 6 months in particular that are stacked, and I know that obviously from the fights that you're making, it's going to continue to do that. But from a business point of view, what are the things that now you're pushing the UFC towards?
Yeah, I mean, what we're looking to do is hopefully everything opens up again and the world starts running the way it did 5 years ago, and you know, we can start going to these different territories that we've never been, and get back to places that we haven't been to in a long time. You know, I'd like to get a fight back up in Toronto and other parts of Canada. We're going to go to France here pretty soon. You know, I want to do Africa. We have our Singapore event coming up here, not this weekend, but next weekend. The list goes on and on. I'm just ready to start getting back to normal life and running this business the way we did 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I think UFC fans have been, you know, we've been blessed in a lot of ways because of the Apex, because of that incredible facility that you didn't have to pump the brakes on this thing. When the rest of the world stopped, the UFC just carried on going. And it was phenomenal, especially from a media perspective, where we still just got to cover the sport that we love and deliver it. And we gained so many new fans. But it's so important, Dana, isn't it, to go, you know what? The Apex is there. We will continue to use it. But the beauty of the UFC is taking it on the road, taking it to cities across America, across the world, because that's how you truly fall in love with the sport. And there's nothing quite like a UFC fight night, no matter where you are in the world, because every fight's a real fight. And the atmosphere, as you well know, is electric for the full duration of the evening. And that's how you truly win fans over, I think, is by putting the sport right in front of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why the sport grew as fast as it did. We're great on TV. It's a great product on television, but the live product is, there's nothing like it. No other sport can even compare live to the UFC. So as long as we can, you know, continue to travel around and introduce new people to the live, you don't ever walk out of one of these fights and go, yeah, I don't ever want to see one of these again. So
that's fair.
We hope to start traveling again and you know, going all over the world and running this business like we did a few years ago.
Is UFC 300 on the board yet? Are you thinking about UFC 300? Because it's coming. It's coming quick.
We haven't even talked about that. That's funny you say that. Yeah, we haven't even talked about that. Yeah, we're coming up on what, like 275?
Yeah.
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 It's not far away.
25 shows will go quick.
That's it. Yeah. Well, we had the gold octagon surface for 200, didn't we? We're gonna have to have some platinum stuff or something made up now. Something like that, man. Like, listen, we got two things to finish up on, Dana. Obviously, I love watching on the social media feed your preview of fights on the Friday before the actual fight night. And one of the things you've got a fantastic saying now. If you don't know, now you know, is obviously what you say at the end of that particular thing. And there's a little bit of language that is involved in the crypto world, where people have these sayings that are being used. Are you familiar with any of the crypto sayings that are out there at the moment?
No.
Nick's got a couple lined up here for you, mate. Just give him a little test. See if you would get... I reckon Denner would figure it out very, very quickly. What have you got, Nick?
Yeah, there's LFG. LFG is a big one in the crypto world.
Let's fucking go.
There we go. Perfect. Then the other one is Wagbo. Familiar with Wagbo?
Wagabout?
Wagbo. W-A-G-B-O. Wagbo.
Wagbo. No.
We're all going to be okay. That's quite a prominent one in crypto at the moment.
Right, okay. I prefer let's fucking go. That's miles better. That's the one. Listen, Dana, we promised right at the start of this for people watching that we would give away those bonuses. People have been purchasing throughout the course of this interview. Let's flash up a few onto the screen right now so Dana can pick away... Right, there's some NFTs on there, Dana, some pictures of NFTs. You can see, obviously, there's a Bisping one on there. Right, it's up to you, Dana. You pick three. Pick any three of those there, and we will award the person that has purchased them 20 G's in block. Yeah, which one do you think? What are you going for?
Let me zoom in on this thing. Well, I got to go with the Ali one.
Of course. Absolutely. All right, then. There we go. We'll flag that. So that's one Ali there. Another two, please, Dana.
Who's the top left?
That's Bisping, man. That top left
that's
is Bisping on my
in a
screen,
red cap, yeah.
That's Bisping?
Yeah, that's
all
Bisping.
All right, I'll go with Bisping. Okay. And then I'll go with the last one, the bottom one on the right.
He's going with Till.
That's Till.
That's it. You've got
Till
your
on the
NFT.
Beach.
So we've got a Darren Till, we've got a Muhammad Ali, and we've got a Michael Bisping. If you're the owners of those NFTs, we will get you sorted. And just remember that you just got 20 grand in block from the president of the UFC, Mr. Dana White, dishing out the bonuses on a Tuesday evening here in the UK. Sir,
I love it.
Thank you so much for your time. I know that
Thanks
time is precious.
And
I know that you've got a little trip to Singapore. Enjoy that. And we're looking forward to seeing you back here in the UK very, very shortly for part two of UFC London. Dana, thank you so much for your time.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Dana.
Take care, my man. There you go. President of the UFC, the one and only Dana White joining us for a little bit of the block
the G's.
Party.
I love it.
Dishing out the
I
G's,
love it, man.
Dishing out the G's. Mm-hmm. Please tell me that one of them NFTs wasn't yours, yeah? You didn't purchase that yourself, did you?
I'm saying nothing. Cheddar, cheddar, ching! Hey! No, I wish.
There you go. If you did purchase your NFT, just a quick one on that. Whilst you were purchasing those NFTs, we said right at the start of the show, you will get the purchase price of your NFT that you bought during the interview with Dana White there. You will get that reimbursed to you in block. All right. There are terms and conditions that are available for you to read through in our Discord. It's all there for you. Make sure you're checking that out. But you'll get that reimbursed in block. And of course, congratulations to the three victors there that got themselves not only a new NFT but
got
20 bags
back.
In that
and 20
yeah,
bags
back,
on top.
And they got the 20 bags and they got it off Dana White. It'll get better
exactly
than that, man.
Where else in this universe is doing competitions like that? I'll tell you nowhere else. Only Block Party are giving away stuff like that, so make sure you subscribe. Come back every week. This is the tip of the iceberg, man. This is what we do every week. We bang out block left, right and center.
Also, I mean, I tell you what, you also got some tips. If you ever go to Vegas, make sure you go and gamble at Caesar's Palace because that's the gaff. Listen, he's wiped out.
I'm just going to say,
He's not just wiped it out once, by the way. He's wiped it out twice, the Palms Hotel. That's why he's not allowed back in there. He's only allowed to go in there for food.
That's so true. Let's be honest. I think there's only you're looking at the one percenters of the planet that can gamble in the same room as Dana White. You know, he's not on the floor with the rest of us punters, is he? He's not umming and ahhing over a $5 chip, let's be honest.
There you go. There you go. Have we given any away? Have we chipped any block out this evening? I know that Dana's just given away 60.
60 G's.
Yeah, I know.
I was pumping the brakes, to be honest.
Yeah, we're just hanging fire, are we, on giving away any further block? I'm sure we can. If you've got your wallet, you know the script. If you do come to us on a week-by-week basis, stick your wallets in the chat. And what we will do at certain points, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll get our next guest to do that. When our next guest turns up, we will chip in with a little bit of AJ Vaynerchuk.
Wallets. Uh-huh.
He can have a little bit of a pick on that. Now, what we didn't get the opportunity to do, obviously, because the transition between speaking to Laura and Dana White was so fluid, we didn't get the opportunity, obviously, to dissect what Laura Sanko's doing in the broadcast game. A stellar broadcaster. You know how difficult it is. We do this gig ourselves. You know how difficult it is to obviously be a colour commentator, the play-by-play person, the interviewer, and all those types of things. If you are a young person with aspirations of getting yourself into this game, I thought that was a fantastic insight into the mindset of someone who's at the very, very top. And she is. And she was playing herself down a lot there, Laura.
Absolutely.
She's at the very, very top. And just the way that she was speaking about work ethic, I think a lot of people can learn off stuff like that. And hopefully there's a few young people that were watching that and maybe think to themselves, okay, if the best are working like that, then I've got to work even harder, mate. So fingers crossed they take that on there.
Correct. Absolutely. Listen, she's had an unconventional route into the industry as well. And that's for anyone that loves MMA or any sport or even any kind of industry, passion always rides through. You know, it doesn't necessarily matter that you haven't got, in her case, a broadcasting or a formal journalism qualification. An opportunity arose. She took that opportunity and she's run with it. And as she said herself, she likes to believe she's the hardest working person in the room. She's got to overcompensate. She's got to prove how much she knows, how much knowledge she's got, and how much she loves the sport by putting the graft in. And we've all been there, man. When she was saying earlier about, you know, in the early days, I did a lot of work for free. We've been there. I worked for 2 or 3 years pretty much for nothing when I first became a journalist, but I knew this is what I wanted to do. And I pursued it. And then now, obviously, you know, I regularly get messages from people saying that they could easily replace me on BT and everything else. But it's funny how lucky you get the harder you work in it. And that's kind of testament to where Laura is. And listen, when Dana finally announces what Fight Night show Laura's going to be analyst on, at least we can say we made it happen right here on the block party. You're welcome, Miss Sanko.
That's it. Listen, if she gets that opportunity, I'm sure she will. She sorted that out herself, but you know what I mean? It's always nice to facilitate and it's always nice to get involved with that. I've noticed as well, obviously there's quite a lot of repeat listeners to the Block Party, and we really appreciate that. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel here, because we're here every single Tuesday night, 7 p.m. in the UK, and we're beaming around the world, obviously talking about sports, about crypto, and we're talking about NFTs. And our next guest we're going to speak to in a very, very short period of time is going to concentrate a little bit more so on the crypto and NFT side of things. But obviously he's got a big affiliation with sport as well. So we're going to be speaking to AJ Vaynerchuk very, very shortly. But what I have noticed, Nicholas, and this has come down to you, I don't know whether you're doing this on social media or whether it's just because of your blag throughout the course of the show, so many people are paying you compliments in the comment section in order to get free block. No. They don't know. What they're doing is going, if I pay Nick a compliment, I might end up on the show and then I'll get myself some free block. That's
I've
your
only
bag,
highlighted
man.
One or two here with give me nice compliments for a little bit of block later. So,
yeah. And for those that didn't catch it earlier on in the program when we were talking about tattoos and various other things, Nick has challenged someone to have a tattoo done of himself. So if you get a Nick Pete tattoo, he will give you 10,000 block, 10,000 block and
a Legends NFT. I wouldn't say it if I didn't mean it, but the caveat to that is, whatever you do, don't get a tattoo of me on your body. But I'm just saying, if someone was foolish enough, boom, mate, I'll deliver.
It would be elite. Absolutely. Even if it's just like,
you should get it,
Pete.
You should get
it. Why would I get it?
Why I'll would give I you get? A Legends NFT and 10,000 blocks.
I'm okay with my own. I'm fine with the NFTs that I've got. Yeah, I don't need another because of a tattoo that I've got of you. Not happening. Not happening whatsoever. Right. Shall we continue with our guests? We've had a stellar night so far. This night is purely about trailblazers. That's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We've spoken to the trailblazing Laura Sanko. We have spoken to the trailblazing Dana White. It's time to get stuck into more trailblazers. This gentleman and his brother have just been absolutely sensational. If you're in the crypto space, if you're in the NFT space, if you're just in the business space, I suppose, in general, you know full about VaynerMedia, VaynerSports, you know about that Vaynerchuk name. And AJ Vaynerchuk very kindly has given up a little bit of time to come and join us on the show to talk about everything that's going on in his world and maybe pass on a little bit of advice to people that are listening to the show as well. Please welcome the one, the only, Mr. AJ Vaynerchuk. How are you, sir? Are you well? There we go.
Hey, guys.
There you go. How are you, AJ? You well? Good?
Yeah, all is well. Thanks for having me.
Now, listen, my man, we are obviously huge sports fans, and we know that you're managing and involved in the careers and the development of careers with so many different athletes, mainly from our point of view in the world of MMA and the UFC. So we're going to pick your brains, man, and you're going to tell us about fights that you're making for these people. We'll get to that in a minute, okay, sir? But first and foremost, for the community that are watching and are listening to the show, that some might not know too much about crypto, might not know too much about NFTs, but there's a big community here that do. They're into it. They're invested into it. And maybe they've just got into it. And at the moment, every time you read a report about this world, it can be a little bit alarming. So from your point of view, a man that's in there, a man that's doing this on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis, what is your understanding right now of the landscape? Where do you think this landscape is going? And what advice would you give to people that are interested in knowing a little bit more about crypto?
Sure. Yeah, I think there's no denying that the current crypto climate is a little bit chilly. You know, we had a pretty nice little bull run in, call it, like late March, early April. And then I think the last 6 weeks or so has not been as good, as strong. You know, the main, you know, coins that I look at from a crypto perspective are mainly the NFT-based ones. So things like, you know, Ethereum, Solana. Obviously, I always look at what Bitcoin's up to just because I think Bitcoin is the legacy player in the crypto space. And a lot of what's happening on a macro level can be seen on a micro level when looking at Bitcoin. And so, yeah, it's not been a great 6 weeks. I think at the end of the day, though, having a great week every week forever is unsustainable. That's not how a market works, right? Up only is a fun little adage and a fun little meme, but it's just not a reality for crypto, for NFTs, or any individual project. And so to the advice point that was brought up, Adam, one, never overinvest, never over leverage. You have to be mindful that whether it's public stock markets or the cryptocurrency landscape or NFT projects, there's always the ability for it to come crashing down. In the NFT space, liquidity can be tough, right? Whereas in public markets, you're able to sell stock pretty instant if you want to get out, whereas an NFT, somebody has to actually go and buy that NFT. And so, you know, never allow yourself to over leverage. There's a great Warren Buffett quote that I'm going to butcher, but it's basically the concept of, like, when others are greedy, be fearful. And when others are fearful, be greedy. So I actually think this is an interesting time to buy. I did a little bit of dabbling, you know, a funny project on the ETH blockchain, Goblins, things up to like 4.4 ETH per. I bought some at like 2 ETH, you know, 4 or 5 days ago. That's worked out so far. Now Goblins can go to zero, and I know that. And I didn't over leverage myself. The other piece of advice, and I'm using a bunch of cliches, but I think it holds true, is it's also really hard to catch a falling knife. So just because ETH and Solana and these other coins are going down, and they're way down, doesn't mean they're done going down, right? Yeah. You know, ETH is at 1900 USD, Solana's at 45 USD. And yeah, that's a huge discount on what it was 6, 7, 8 weeks ago. There's nothing that says that ETH can't go down to 1000 or 800 or 200. There's nothing that says Solana can't go from 45 to 30 to 5. And so I'm a big picture investor. I'm a big picture thinker. You can check the blockchain on me, ajv.eth. And then I think coldajvcold.eth or ajvcold.eth, I think is actually the right one. I've got two primary wallets, not done a lot of selling in the last 6, 7 weeks. Done a tiny bit of buying over the last week and plan to continue to go. And I'm in a situation where I don't have, you know, the need to liquidate in order to pay my mortgage or keep the lights on. And I think that's a smart thing to do. So that's my overall thought on the ecosystem and advice.
What? Yep. Listen, from your business knowledge, investing in other markets, how do you think this looks in 12 months' time? How do you think this looks in 24 months' time? Because I know that obviously you will be strategically planning for those times. What is the gut right now that it looks like in 12 months?
I think, I don't know whether we'll be in a peak or a valley in 12 months, right? Because if you asked that question to me 12 months ago, you know, depending on the timing, it could either be euphoric or it could be falling down, crashing. And I think over the next year or two, we still have plenty of room for peaks and valleys. I'll kind of answer it in a different way that I personally am very bullish on NFT technology and certain cryptocurrencies in general, making a meaningful impact in terms of how our society operates. The same way in 2009, my brother and I started VaynerMedia. I was a huge believer in social media becoming an integral part of our society, which ended up being true. But I didn't know that TikTok was going to exist. I didn't know that Instagram was going to exist. Yeah. At that time, it was Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. And, you know, so I would say in general, I don't know how it's going to look 1 to 2 years from now. We might be in a peak. We might be in a valley. There might be euphoria. There might be panic. But overall, I think Web3 is going to have a seismic impact the same way Web1 and Web2 did, right? So websites in the 90s, social media channels in the late 2000s and early and teens. I think NFT tech and crypto is going to make the same push over these next 5 to 15.
What's Vayner Sports' approach to Web3?
Yeah, so we've taken a few different approaches. I think the most important primary approach is the fact that we actually launched our own NFT project on the Ethereum blockchain about 2 months ago. So we launched something called Vayner Sports Pass, which was a NFT utility pass layered on top of our existing business. So I think one thing that's interesting for a lot of these projects in the NFT space is that a lot of the projects are being operated by anonymous founders, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know the founders, don't know their background, and there's been some drama for certain projects here and there along the way because of that. So the fact that we built something on top of a platform in which Vayner Sports represents 150 plus athletes, we've been in business for 5+ years. Our principals and our core staff have been in business for a combined 100 plus years. We're across MMA, American football, baseball, as well as gaming, 35 employees. Like, we're an existing business that has existed before Web3 and will continue to integrate Web3. And we've done some really interesting and novel aspects to our product in terms of NFT benefits, digital benefits as a whole, in real life experiences at sporting events and other opportunities. And I guess most of all so far has been just interactions and opportunities with our current client list. So doing things like private Discord conversations with, we did one with Aljamain Sterling and Michelle Waterson recently, separately. We did those two in the last like 7 weeks. And so, you know, utilizing our client base that I mentioned and having them be integrated with our community as well. So that's been a focus. And then we've also looked at some partnerships with NFT projects, you guys included. We've had some conversations with one of our athletes in particular. And then, but we've also dabbled and done some other stuff with other projects, with other clients across sports too.
What we've found, covering MMA, what we've found is that the MMA community in particular is so open, and the minds are so open to the actual concept of NFTs, of cryptos, and obviously how this is all going. Obviously, you deal with a lot of these athletes on a day-by-day basis. Is it an easy sell? Is it an easy education with them?
Yeah, I would say no disrespect to my football players, no disrespect to my baseball players. I think gamers fit in this category too. But what I have found with MMA fighters is that I think a lot of MMA fighters come from a background where they had to earn it, where they had to be open-minded, where they had to be creative. If they're further along in their career, they got to see what your previous guest Dana has done over the last, you know, 10 to 20 years to get it to the place that it's been. Whereas, again, this isn't to knock football players or baseball players, but you know, if you're a prominent and successful football player, there's a really good chance that when you were in middle school, you were the most popular, most talented kid in your town. When you're in high school, you were the biggest deal. When you're in college, you're like, you've had more time in the light. And again, it's not the case for every player that we represent, but a lot of times there are these big recruits and they've had a lot given to them and they've had a lot of attention. And I just find that they tend to maybe be a little bit more hands open, saying, hey, bring me opportunities. I'll take them when they come. Whereas I feel like MMA fighters are like, hey, like I heard this crypto thing and NFTs, like how can I fit in? How can I get involved? Where can I learn? I think there's just a little bit more of a go-getter type attitude for MMA fighters. And I think a lot of that comes with the sport, the upbringing of the sport. You know, I don't know how many MMA fighters were the most popular kid in school and talked about in the media when they were 14, right? And so I think that's part of the culture. But I just find MMA fighters be very open-minded and very much go-getters.
How much will the social token kind of change this space, do you think? You know, I think a lot of athletes will appreciate that a lot more. That's something that we're, you know, that's fundamentally part of the Block asset business, that we plan on tokenizing every athlete on our roster. Do you think that's going to change this space a lot as well?
Yeah, I think there's real opportunity there. I think about tokenization a lot. I think there's been a lot of interesting alternative means for financial instruments in sports for a while now. So I think of a company called Fantex, which now has pivoted and operated as something called X10, which had a big focus in football, where they were actually able to invest in athletes like you would invest in a company, right? Where an athlete could sell 10% of their future earnings potential to Fantex X10. Now that's being done a little bit more privately. There's other platforms that I've seen attack the space. I think, you know, there's some hoops and hurdles to jump through, but I think inevitably there's enough rationale behind this type of construct. There's enough rationale behind social tokens that I definitely see it having an impact. Now, I don't think it's a one size fits all. I don't think every athlete will have a social token, but I think the right integration with the right athlete will be very successful. And I think we're kind of just waiting for the first big one, right? Like, so, you know, for example, had like this concept of social tokens and this, that, and the other thing, and even having like financial upside happen with like when Tiger Woods came up, or like I think or LeBron, like I think once there's one big prodigy type athlete, Connor, Tiger, LeBron, once one up and coming prodigy does it and it's awesome and it's successful, I think you're gonna see a flood follow, because I think consumer behavior will understand it fast.
Yeah.
You mentioned a moment or two ago, AJ, Venus Sports is going from strength to strength, obviously looking after some of the most prominent athletes in the world that me and Nick cover in the world of MMA. Talk to me, man. When are we getting Stipe Miocic versus John Jones, bro? Let's go.
Correct.
Let's not mess about, man. Let's go.
Please say the ink is just still wet on the contract.
I think it's very important to note, and you can ask Dana, I am not day-to-day involved with the actual fighting contracts. My business partner, Lloyd Pearson, he's the actual agent for all of our fighters, where I spend my time. So Stipe, I talk to Stipe a bunch. I'm far more likely to talk to Stipe about a NFT mint tomorrow than I am about his next fight. So I'm more on the business and marketing side with our MMA fighters. And I talk a ton about NFTs and crypto with them. But when it comes to the actual fight making and the contracts, that's Lloyd's arena.
AJ, ring Lloyd. Ring him now. Let's get Lloyd on. Where's Lloyd? Let's get Lloyd on here, man.
When's this fight happening?
I'm sure Lloyd would say no comment if they're.
Listen, exciting though to be involved with so many stellar athletes in the UFC. And Absolutely. Should those fights materialize, and fingers crossed they do, from a fan's point of view, it's only going to help the side of the business that you obviously are involved with heavily as well, because people are going to want to invest more in those athletes.
No question. Yeah, no, we, I'm very proud. We've got an incredible mix of fighters that we represent, and, you know, up and down the weight classes. And for me, it's been fun just talking transparently. You know, I'm a big sports fan, but growing up, I didn't have a wide array of sports. I was kind of more of a deep than wide. So American football and basketball were my two biggest passions, probably baseball in third. And frankly, the MMA and the UFC was not high on my list as a fan and as a consumer. But then when we did the business deal with Lloyd and he joined us and he brought off a great, you know, he brought some great clients along with him, you know, Chris Weidman, Aljamain Sterling, Corey Sanhagen, you know, brought a great client list with him. And so, you know, working with him, getting familiar with our roster, and then, you know, I think, like, what was the first fight I watched? I don't know. It was either like a Clay Guida fight. I don't know. You know, I watched a bunch of fights. I went back and watched fights, and I started watching clients fight because I was in the business now, and I got to do Zoom with them and got to know them. But then it was kind of like, you know, I'd make sure to watch a client fight on a Saturday, but, oh, like the main event seems interesting, or the fight before our fight seems. And so I started watching non-clients, and then I would watch the fights, and then the commentary, you know, you would either have like Rogan or Cormier be like, oh yeah, like last fight when he did. And I'm like, well, I got to go watch last fight now to understand this fight better. and then I'm watching the logs of our clients' previous fights so I can get better. One thing I did that really ramped me up fast is, like, let's say we had, let me look real quick, cause this will tell a good story. This is a really good story. I just want to make sure I get my facts right. So give me 10 seconds. So it's about Corey Sanhagen.
Just while you're having a look there on Corey's research, just pull that stat back up again, guys, because as you can see there, during the Dana interview, those 20 minutes, we sold 430 Smash Brothers and Legends NFTs in 20 minutes. Something quite special there. Good work. Great work, everyone.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And as we said at the top of the show, everyone who's bought those NFTs, follow the small print on that. We will reimburse you with Block for what you paid for those NFTs here at the Block Party with Block Asset.
I'm looking forward to this story now. You've bigged me up now, AJ. I'm ready for this now.
So this is in like October of 2020. This is heading into Corey's fight with Marlon Moraes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we had done the deal with Lloyd like, I'm looking at maybe 2.5 months prior, like August of 2020. Okay. And so I'm getting ready for Corey's fight against Marlon. And Lloyd's just telling me about, you know, how talented Corey is and how excited he is for him for this fight with Moraes. And I was like, okay, well, I don't want to go into Corey's fight against Marlon without like understanding how Corey fights. I met Corey, super chill dude. Like, Corey's the best. Very humble. And then what was interesting, though, was, you know, I don't want to talk too much about this, but I then went and watched like 5 or 6 fights of Corey's leading into the Marlon fight. And then, you know, I watched, I'm looking at it now. I watched the Mario Bautista fight. I was selfish. I just looked for all the finishes. I was like, all right, I watched Bautista. I watched Oppenheimer.
Highlights.
I went to LFC or LFA, excuse me. I'll gloss over quickly him and Aljo, because they're both clients. Him and Aljo had a fight that, you know, Corey got caught on, and he learned from that mistake. But, you know, going in, like having a client, but then going in back and watching 5, and then the excitement, having like spent time with Corey, watched some of his fights, getting a feel for Corey. And then one of his coaches from where he trains, Elliot Marshall, actually took me through. We actually like watched tape on Zoom. He took me through a fight from a year or two away. He's like, this is why Corey's doing this. This is why Corey's doing. So I had like an actual MMA trainer coach walking through. And so then when I watched the Moraes fight, I was like super jazzed. I had all this info, and then obviously, you know, the kick to the head breaks the orbital, I think, and like I'm jumping out of my chair. And like, quickly for me, if you ask me right now, take all my clients off the table, right, what, you know, remind 2 years ago, watch any casual game on a random day, I would probably pick American football first, basketball second, baseball third. Just in 2 years, I'd probably rather watch a random Saturday night fight night over any basketball game. And that means UFC being like ranked 11th on my list to number 2 quickly. And, you know, American football has been a passion of mine for 30 years, and that'll be a tough nut to crack. But the adrenaline you get watching the chess match of a fight versus just about anything else is just unbelievable.
Especially when you've had that insight and education as to knowing exactly what you're looking for. I mean, that's
absolutely sensational. For sure. So
listen, AJ, I'm conscious that we've kept you. My friend, thank you so much for giving up your time and obviously giving us the insight as well. And I'm sure that you've not only inspired, but maybe put a few minds at rest as well with where the current landscape is in the crypto world. And you've made it extremely exciting for those new faces as well. AJ, thank you so much for joining us on the show, mate.
Adam, Nick.
Thanks, AJ. See you soon. Take care.
Top man. There you go. The CEO from Vena Sports, AJ Vaynerchuk, joining us just to talk through crypto and NFTs. We've had an action-packed night. Trailblazer night tonight. That's what we've gone for. We had Laura Sanko on early doors. We had Dana White joining us on the show. And then, of course, you just heard there from AJ Vaynerchuk. And we gave away 60 G's in block. 60.
Mental.
Mental. I wondered if do we have the winners? I'll just have a quick look on our production, our producer's screen. Where is he? Where's our boy there? He's gone off for a minute. I wondered if we've actually got
the three winners. I think
flash them up if we have. If we have, we'll talk them through it. But if we haven't, don't worry.
Yeah, the people who bought those NFTs obviously will be more than aware of who they are. But just that stat that we flicked up a few seconds ago there when we had AJ on, unbelievable. What an NFT rush that was. But I'm not surprised, man. I think a lot of people, there we go, 430 NFTs sold in 20 minutes. And I'm not surprised because it was an incredible opportunity to obviously get the 20 grand bonus, but also to get your money back in block. Mate, come on. That doesn't happen anywhere else, man. It only happens here at the block party.
And as well as obviously Dana talking through his phenomenal rise, not only him, but with the UFC, he told everybody to let's fucking go. What more do you want?
LFG. LFG.
Dana's invited everybody to Caesar's Palace to go and get on it, man. Let's go and have a party with the fella. Now, listen, what a stellar guest list that we've had this evening. And thank you very much to you for participating in the show. It's only getting bigger. It's only getting better. Every single week when we have our production meetings and the boys are coming up with suggestions for guests that we should get on the show, absolutely blows my mind every single week. We've gone from Alexander Usyk to Roberto Carlos to Trent Alexander-Arnold to now the president of the UFC. It really is mind-blowing. Thank you so much for the support. We've only been going a month. One month. This is our fifth show.
Yeah.
I hope you're enjoying it as much as we're enjoying it. Just remember to subscribe. So if this is the first time you've ever come to us, make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe to the Discord. Make sure you're across all the social media channels, because as we've said earlier on in the show, there is going to be a roadmap that is going to be released a little later on this week. Mm-hmm. We told you a little bit about that roadmap, which is going to involve an Alexander Usyk NFT collection, and the proceeds from that NFT collection are going to go to Alexander Usyk's foundation to help his motherland of Ukraine through this crisis at the moment. So keep an eye out for that on all the social media channels. That's going to be really important for you to get involved with. Now, you're a little bit more clued up on all the things that we had to talk about on today's show, Nicholas. Have I missed anything? Is there anything that we need to just sign the show off with?
I think also just worth mentioning, apart from this product roadmap that we've got coming out as well, there are also going to be some NFT staking games on there. There's also an asset store coming, NFT stakes be redeemed in real life products, sports, memorabilia, and plenty of experience. And I tell you what, I might be giving away a bit too much here, but there's a little lady celebrating a jubilee this week. Don't be surprised if she pops up on Block Assets next Tuesday. That's where we could go next week. We've got to go bigger than Dana White, and there's not many bigger. So don't be surprised if old Liz pops up flashing her NFTs.
I beg your pardon. And on that, we will finish the show. Thank you so much for your time on this Tuesday evening. Enjoy the rest of your week. And don't forget to come back and join us next week, 7 o'clock UK time, for the block party.